Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hello, how are you? This is John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. Thank you so much for joining me again at Hack the Entrepreneur. I really, really do truly appreciate it, and I hope you're having as much fun as I am. So if you haven't had a chance yet, stop by the website, hacktheentrepreneur.com. There's a subscribe button there. It's going to take you to my new newsletter that's starting this week. I'm going to email you once a week, just a short note of the things I've learned from the conversations I'm having with people on Hack the Entrepreneur and also in my own business. Plus, that really is the best way to start up a conversation with me. You can hit reply to any email. Once you're on this list, hit reply to any email. If you have a question, comments, just want to chat, by all means, just hit me up. I would love to have a conversation with you. But enough about me. Let's get right into episode 3 of Hack the Entrepreneur. Today's guest is Ben Arment. Ben has started numerous companies and written several books, his latest book being Dream Year, a book written to help you make the leap from a job you hate to a life you love. Now, let's hack Ben Arment. I have Ben Arment today on the show, so welcome, Ben.
Thank you, John. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. So let's just jump right into it, Ben. Can you tell me specifically what you do as an entrepreneur that you think other people don't that has been a big contributor to your success?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like one of my strengths is leveraging the relationships that I have to be involved in what I'm doing. I think a lot of entrepreneurs out there are lone guns. They try to launch projects and businesses off the backs of their own labor and their own sweat equity. I feel like one of my strengths is leveraging friendships and leveraging relationships to multiply the impact of my work. So whether it's the events that I produce, or whether it's launching a book like the one that I've written, and certainly a book is a business model in and of itself. It is to really leverage the relationships in my life to make things go further.
So basically, you build community around, I guess, your ideas. And
yeah.
Can you tell me about the very first event you ever put on?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was living in Reston, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C. And, you know, I didn't know very much about putting on conferences. I always dreamed of doing it. I wanted to start a business that would launch events, but I didn't quite know what I was doing. And, that's a beautiful gift, because it requires you to lean into the expertise of other people. And so it involved me inviting someone who was good at production to help with the audio and visual component of the event. And it called me to lean on people who were great at administration to run registration for the event and organizing the logistics of the conference. And the list goes on and on. And, you know, even to this day, I'm 6 years in that business and building, conferences and events. I still lean heavily on volunteer talent. I would say for every conference I do, we have probably over 100 volunteers that are serving. And we have, somewhere along the lines of 12 team leaders who are also volunteer, but have been doing it for a while with me. And they share a passion for the cause. They love what we're doing, what we're accomplishing. And honestly, I couldn't do it without them. If I had to hire every single one of these people, we couldn't afford to do it. So I think volunteerism is probably one of the most untapped natural resources in the world. And we just assume that other people don't want to be a part of what we're doing. And that's wrong. People love to be a part of a great cause.
Putting on an event is a big, big project. But even a smaller project, you kind of think, personally, I do anyways, like, well, I can't do that part and that part and that part. So, maybe I should move to a different project. I love the idea of just being like, well, no, I don't know how to do the video production, or I don't know how to do the administration. So yeah. I'll find people who do.
It's amazing. But, I know that a lot of times our, business endeavors are meant to provide for our living. They are meant to be revenue sources for us. I think that causes a lot of people to feel a little bit reluctant to ask other people to be a part of it when we can't pay them, because after all, we're getting paid to do it. But at the end of the day, there are other sources of value that we give to other people besides money. It could be just really being a part of a great cause. I remember I got a chance to meet Garrison Keillor one time. And of course, he's the host of a Prairie Home Companion on National Public Radio. And I asked him, I said, early on, how did you get this thing off the ground? Because it requires musicians and actors and all sorts of other moving parts, people who are great at production. And he said, it was my friends. You know, they came around me and they helped me. They filled in as actors, or they played, you know, on the radio show before I could even pay them. I think we assume that if it's our livelihood, that it's somehow a horrible thing to ask other people for help, when the reality is there's so much value we can give to people just to be a part of something remarkable.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Actually, and it's funny because now that you're talking about it like that, just from my own personal life in the past month, my daughter's 9 years old and we went on this trip to the Philippines, and like I went to a business conference there. And she met some people who convinced her to start a podcast. She's 9 years old, right? And so I got into the part of, well, we need some like intro music. And we went to Chicago last year. We drove down, and this guy, Frank Turner from England, who I love, but he brought this Minneapolis band called Cuckoo Kangaroo. And she's been obsessed with them ever since. And she's like, I want Cuckoo Kangaroo to do it. I'm like, I wonder. So I was like, why don't we just email them? Let's go to their website. And she emailed them and they're like, well, can we talk to you? And so she got them on Skype and she chatted with them, told them exactly what she wanted. And they're like, Sadie, as long as you promise me you won't just quit your podcast after, say, 5 episodes, you continue. It's going to be hard, but just keep going and keep going. We'll do all the music for you. And because it'll take us work too. Wow. And we'll give it to you. And they did.
That's amazing.
Like, I know. I was just like, and this is exactly what you're saying. And wow, that's amazing. And I think more people need to know, be willing to ask, right? If you don't, especially if you don't know how to, like, don't let it hold you up and take it somewhere else and to other people.
Well, there's a sort of a natural innocence and humility that comes with the ask of a child. But I think if we were to be vulnerable and honest with our friends, they would be willing to bend over backward to help us, especially through the startup season of what we're doing. And it takes humility. And for us, it can feel like incompetence, and we don't want to advertise our incompetence to people. But I think if we get a little bit humble and say, look, you're so good at this, would you help me in this area just this once, or maybe a couple of times, help me get off the ground? People are really honored to be asked. It helps them feel like they've got something really valuable to contribute to the world. And certainly there are going to be people who tell you no. There are going to be people who just don't have the time, or maybe they've been burned by being asked too much by other people. But I think for the most part, people really are eager and willing to help when they are approached by someone else. So, man, what a great lesson and reminder for all of us. So what a great story.
Yeah, that's, and incompetence that you said, I think is absolutely right. I think as adults, we're afraid to look incompetent or to look wrong about something. And I think it's also like as kids, we don't laugh as much anymore. And laughter is the best thing we could possibly do, but we lose it somewhere along the way. Mm. And yeah, I think that's a great thing. So you have a new book called Dream Year.
Yes. Yeah.
Can you just briefly tell us Dream Year, how it came to be?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I became one of the earliest bloggers that I knew on the internet. In fact, I read recently the book Hatching Twitter by Nick Bilton. And in it, he describes that one of the key players at Twitter started the website Blogspot, you know, and that was one of the first blogging tools that existed. I think I started my blog the same year that that blogging tool was launched. So it's been a long time. And I rode for a while the popularity of blogging as it grew. And I would frequently write about my endeavors. And of course, being very entrepreneurial, I was always describing new projects I was launching and new businesses I was getting off of the ground and things that I was a part of. And what happened was people would start emailing me saying, how did you do this? Or how did you do that? And every single question that I got, I found that I was answering in the same exact way. There appeared to be a proven process that I had been following that I was able to share with other people as they asked me questions. And so what I thought was there's got to be a way for me to systematize this, for me to be able to share with people the principles that I've followed. And sure enough, I started Dreamier, and in the first advertisement of the coaching program, there were probably over 120 people that applied. And of course, I could only accept 12, but I've been doing it over the last 5 years, and just the stories that have unfolded from it has been really remarkable to watch. So,
oh, that's great. And so now events, you as an author, now you go on like a book tour and you promote your book in different cities around the country or around the world, right? And you are taking a different approach to that. You are doing the Dream Nights?
Yeah, it's called Dreamier Pitch Nights.
Dreamier Pitch Nights. So can you explain this? Because I think this is such a cool take on the book tour.
Yeah, you know, I knew that taking the book, across America, if it was just me doing it, it could have been disastrous. I mean, I've got certainly a blog following and a Twitter following and Instagram following, but not large enough that I thought I would pack out bookstores if I showed up to just read from my book. So I thought, how can I engage people at a greater level than just a book signing or a book reading? And I became familiar with a movement that's spreading all throughout the world called Pecha Kucha, and it's PECHAKUCHA.org. PechaKucha.org. And what they do is they have presenters share ideas using 20 slides, and each of them advance every 20 seconds. So it's a 6 minute and 40 second presentation. And it gives people a chance to share their ideas using visuals. And people come together in various cities across the country or the world even and share these ideas. And it's really, really captivating. So I thought, why not do that for the concept of people's dreams, their ideas, the things that they've always wanted to launch. And it's been amazing what has resulted. There have been groups of 200 people coming together in cities like Nashville, Oklahoma City, Omaha, Seattle. And then, of course, this next week, we've got Indianapolis and Minneapolis and Grand Rapids, Michigan, and so on, where people are coming together. I'm able to share about the book, get the book in their hands, but also they're able to share their dream. And it's an incredible opportunity for them to invite their friends and family and really just share this incredible journey with other people in their city that they may not even have met yet. So I'm having a blast. It's been fun.
Yeah, it's fun. And it's quite brilliant. I mean, it's a great way to get so many people to come out and be engaged in with you, and like your book can be sort of a part of it, right? Is it something that you always do or have always done? How at the beginning where you said, well, a book tour goes out and it's hard to get people to come out. So I thought, how can I do this differently and get people to be engaged in it? That seems to be a running theme in you. Is this something you've always done, or do you actively try and just, well, everybody does it that way. If I do it this way.
I think that differentiation is becoming more critical than ever. You know, one of the chapters in the book is called Your Idea Model. And I wrote it because everybody has ideas. In fact, a lot of people have your same exact idea out there. And the only way that you can really make it, the only way that you can set yourself apart and get on people's radar is to create something very different that they have not experienced yet. So, you know, a couple of examples would be, Cirque du Soleil. I mean, today we look at it and think, you know, we're overwhelmed by the scope and the size of it, but it's had very humble beginnings. And it started off as an attempt by Guy Laliberté to take the circus and basically turn it upside down to make it a theatrical experience. And it created, you know, a phenomenal sort of experience that people had never had before. Now, it was the circus, but there were no live animals. There was no, you know, carnival barkers, you know, outside. It was a very refined and polished experience, and it leaned more into the acrobatics and theatrical world. So we have to do the same thing for our ideas. If we're going to write a book, we can't just write a book that's similar to all the ones that have been written before. We've got to write something different. And, you know, typically when we do retreat weekends, to help people go through the Dream Year process, one of the exercises that I give them is reinvent the lemonade stand. Let's say you can't just sell lemonade and exchange it for money. How would you twist it? How would you spin it differently? And the answers that come back are always really creative and fun. Everything from exotic flavors of lemonade to, you know, how the lemonade is delivered. Maybe it's done through a mobile food truck or something like that. We have to do the same thing for our ideas. We cannot just try to emulate what other people have done in our industry. We have to reinvent the industry. We have to do something fresh and different that has never been seen by the world before.
Okay, Ben, we're going to change gears a little bit. I need to move to some doubts and some fears when you're working. And I guess since you just completed a huge project, which is the writing of a book, the most people never even get to do, right? Or complete. Lots of people have started them. Can you tell me what your biggest doubt or your biggest fear you had sometime during the process from beginning to end of writing that book?
Oh my goodness, yes. I mean, when you start writing a book, the insecurities rise up in you. You begin to doubt the the merit of your ideas, the quality of your writing. It is definitely a daunting exercise. But you know, something that I did early on to make it through the process was not just to vow to write a book or set out to write a book. It was to give myself a job. I believe that all of us have two people inside of us. We have ordinary you and we have CEO you. And the reason why most of us don't complete our goals or fulfill our dreams is because ordinary you is in charge. And whenever things get difficult, whenever we start to feel tired, we don't report for duty. We let ourselves out of work early. You know, it's whatever happens when the boss leaves for the day. It's what the employees do when he or she is gone. But we also have CEO you inside of us. And CEO you is capable of much more than we realize. CEO you has the confidence to walk across the room and introduce ourselves to someone that we may be intimidated by. CEO you has the ability to create a system whereby the business functions well. CEO you has no shame in offering a proposal or extending an invitation or requesting a meeting in order to propose a deal. And CEO you also has the ability to tell ordinary you what the work schedule is, when they need to show up, and to insist that they do it. And so what I did is I decided that I was not going to come home from work on Wednesday night at my day job that I had, you know, 8 years ago. And that I was going to show up for work on weekends when my kids were napping on Saturdays and Sundays. And I showed up for work and I began a writing schedule where I was forcing myself to show up for work. And I may not have had the inspiration to write. I may not have wanted to write, but it was my job to show up. And if people asked if I was busy during those times, if I could hang out during those times, I said, no, I couldn't. I had a job to do. And from that system, you know, a book resulted, and actually all of my projects have resulted. So I don't know that we have the stamina. I don't know that we have the willpower to finish our goals. I think we have to give ourselves a job. And oftentimes that looks like giving ourselves a work schedule. And our only job is to show up. And if we keep doing that, our dream will result.
Wait, let's hear that again.
I don't know that we have the stamina. I don't know that we have the willpower to finish our goals. I think we have to give ourselves a job. And oftentimes that looks like giving ourselves a work schedule. And our only job is to show up. And if we keep doing that, our dream will result.
And that's the hack. It's extra hard for entrepreneurs and us creatives, right? Because we kind of, something inside of us likes to go against schedules and having that boss, even if that boss is yourself. Yeah. But I absolutely agree. You have to have that. So does CEO Ben have a specific morning routine that he walks through, say the first 30 minutes of your day?
And that's a great question. I really do. And at this point, it's become, you know, less tangible on my calendar. It's more of a way of approaching my work. I schedule all of my phone calls in the afternoon, and I spend all of my work, my morning hours, doing more administrative or business focused work, where or writing or things where I've got to just sequester myself from any interruptions on the outside. Now, scheduling my phone calls in the afternoon does a couple of things. First of all, it lets me be really present for the calls that I have because I've got a lot of my productive work behind me. But it also allows me to have phone conversations with people on the West Coast who are 3 hours behind my Eastern Standard Time. But it allows me to section my day off into blocks of productivity, and it works really, really well for me.
Do you schedule your work, and do you also schedule time to hang out with the kids, time to...
Yeah, and I can break it down even further. I think, you know, and I'm not a person who loves routine, so I like there to be some, you know, the give and take in my schedule. But for the most part, my schedule looks like this. You know, I wake up at, you know, 7 or 7:30 in the morning, and I'll hit the elliptical machine. I really feel like, you know, exercising is a good way to just, you know, create mental discipline as well. And so every day I am on the elliptical and working out. And then after that's over, I shower, and then I hit the office, you know, my home office, or I'll hit a local co-working space or a coffee shop, and I'll get done all the administrative and operational tasks that I have to do, or I'll start writing. And then I'll take a lunch break from 12 to 1. And then at 1 o'clock, my phone calls begin. And usually I'm done by 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every single day. And at that time, I'm hanging out with my children and then preparing to have dinner with my family. And, you know, bedtime for my kids is around 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night. And then I'm spending time with my wife in the evening. And that is a typical day. Now, this month is very different. I'm traveling to 11 different cities for the book coming out, and traveling a lot. But I really do enjoy that schedule. I don't pride myself up on waking up really early or working really late. Part of the reason I'm an entrepreneur is to create a lot of freedom in my life. And if I have the kind of work that's not sustaining my livelihood between those hours, then it's time for me to change the model and find a better business model that can accommodate the schedule that I want.
So what would you say is the favorite part of the life that you've now designed for yourself and your family?
For me, without a doubt, it is that I can literally work from anywhere. You know, I'm talking with you from Virginia Beach, Virginia. My family and I are able to have picnics on the beach every night if we want to. And we could also do it from Germany. I could be, you know, talking to you from California or Canada or wherever I want. I have the kind of life where I'm not anchored into an office. Now, not everybody is wired that way. I know many entrepreneurs really desire to build an institution. They want employees. They want a physical office space, and that gives them a lot of sense of achievement and satisfaction. For me, my prevailing value is freedom. So for me, it's that I can work from anywhere. I can control my own schedule. And thankfully, I've really achieved that goal.
I love it. All right, Ben, this has been very, very, very inspiring and just really helpful for me, and I'm sure for a lot of other people. I want to finish it with the one question I like to ask all my guests. And this is actually really great for you because you have a brand new book out. But is there a book, business, or just any sort of book that just comes back into your life, say every 6 months or every year, that you need to just pick up and reread again to center yourself and get yourself moving in the right direction again?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. There are actually two books that I keep on permanent rotation on my bookshelf. The first would be Michael Gerber's The E-Myth. Nice. And my preference on that particular book is to listen to the audio version. Michael Gerber just has a great way with words, and his voice really embodies the passion that he brings into his philosophy and his work. And then the other book is Timothy Ferriss's The 4-Hour Work Week, not because I'm necessarily trying to reduce my number of work hours to that, but because he really gives us a different view of money than I believe that we are naturally predispositioned toward. He helps us see that it's not a salary that we have to seek out, but a revenue source that could come from multiple revenue streams. When I learned that I could support myself from a variety of revenue streams, it revolutionized how I approached my work.
Nice. And with the 4-hour work week, I completely agree. And I don't even think that Tim Ferriss would say that it's about working only 4 hours a week, because he works a lot too in projects that he loves. Mm. But it did the same thing for me, where it really changed my just view of how life and just projects and stuff can work. And that's awesome.
That's so amazing.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Ben. This has been a lot of fun, and I want to just wish you luck on the rest of your tour. And I just hope everything keeps going very well for you.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, that was a fun conversation. Ben is just such a nice, inspiring guy, and I just love the work he's doing, and I love the new book, Dreamier. Check out the website, hacktheentrepreneur.com. I'm going to have links to a whole bunch of Ben's work, including his book and his blog that you can check out and learn more and more about Ben. So please, hacktheentrepreneur.com. If you haven't been to the site, please stop by there now. Subscribe to my newsletter. That's the best place to reach out to me. You can reply to any email. I'll email you once a week, and you can respond to me at any time. And let's just have a conversation. I would really, truly like to just hear from you guys. Also, if you need or are in need of a WordPress site for your business or your project, I have a great friend. His name is Nick Davis. Go to nickdavis.co. He set up hacktheentrepreneur.com for me. He does amazing WordPress work. He's just an all-around great guy. Tell him you heard about him on Hack the Entrepreneur, and he'll totally help you out with whatever you need in WordPress development. Make sure to stay tuned for episode 4 of Hack the Entrepreneur. It is with someone who is building 12 startups in 12 months, and it is an amazing conversation. And until then, keep hacking the entrepreneur.